Believe me.
Believe me.
Believe me.
Believe me.
That £350 million a week figure, which you have emblazoned on the side of the bus, is not the net figure, is it?
Yes or no? Did you ever take banned substances to enhance your cycling performance?
Yes.
I made a serious error of judgment, and I now understand the consequences. It was a failure of leadership, of my leadership.
Mr. Williamson, and please actually, answer the question. Mr. Williamson, you're just not answering the question. Mr. Williamson,
I'll tell you what brings politics and debate into disrepute. It's political lies.
You're listening to Humble Pie, the podcast about humble people achieving amazing things.
Hello, I'm Sarah Collinge, and welcome to the Don't Cry Wolf podcast, Humble Pie, a podcast where we unpick leadership and get to the guts of what it takes to inspire people and achieve incredible things. Don't Cry Wolf has spent a great deal of time talking about being honest, transparent, and showing vulnerability, but we were curious about why it is that you so rarely see and hear humble leadership in real life. In this day and age, are the best leaders strong alpha role models who work harder and hustle more than anyone else and never admit defeat? Or are they humble people who inspire others through showing their fallibility?
What does fallibility mean?
It means that you're not perfect, showing that you're imperfect. This is Harriet Courage, my co-host.
I've got a lot of fallibility. Can you use it in that context? Probably not.
Harriet, would you like to introduce yourself?
I'm Harriet Courage, and I am Sarah Collinge's co-host and psychic.
And
I'm
Courage,
not psychic.
Sidekick, not psychic.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen whether you're psychic.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we will.
I know who we're interviewing, so.
Yeah. Oh, great. Wow. Indeed. Who are we interviewing?
We're interviewing Floyd Woodrow.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very exciting episode. Our first episode, in fact. So in addition to the fact that Harriet's going to be discovering lots and lots of interesting vocabulary that she's never encountered before, we will be speaking to lots of interesting, influential people about leadership, about what it means to them, and asking for their own personal stories to bring that to life. And we hope that this is going to be something that's interesting to listeners, but also we just kind of want to start a bit of a public debate. We want to look into leadership, talk more about authentic and humble leadership, and try and address that sort of vacuum of authenticity that seems to be playing out in the world around us.
I think we were just like, we're a bit bored, aren't we, of bad news and fake news and like
Trump.
And, you know, I've certainly seen, and, you know, from brief conversations with incredible, you know, humans like Floyd, that actually you can be humble and still be a phenomenal leader. And you basically, you don't need to be like the people that we see on TV to get ahead. Mm-hmm. So I hope that by this series of interviews that we're doing, that we actually get to the crux of that and figure out what that is and if that's actually true.
Our guest today is author, speaker, and entrepreneur Floyd Woodrow. Amongst Floyd's many achievements are becoming one of the youngest members of the SAS at 22, where he received an award for gallantry for his work in Iraq and an MBE for his work in Afghanistan. By the time he left the military after 27 years' service, he had risen to the rank of major and had even led the UK's counter-terrorism wing. During that time, he also found a little bit of leftover time to study law and psychology and even to write his first book. After leaving the SAS, he went into business, where he has applied the techniques that he's learned from the SAS to coaching businesses and sports people, including the English Cricket Board and the GB Paralympic team. Floyd is now chairman of the Quantum Group and is launching a new foundation to inspire children and help them to develop their own leadership skills, especially those children who are in danger of falling behind their peer group. Floyd, thank you so much for being with us today on our first ever podcast.
Shall we kick off with you talking a little bit about your leadership style?
Sure. I love the thing about leadership style. And I think you probably go through a number of different sequences where you learn about different leadership styles. But I think the only way to be a really good leader is to have an adaptive style. Mm. And you've got to adapt that to different situations that you find yourself in, from when you first go into a business or you first go into an organization, right the way through to where you've built the team up, you've got trust, you've got great passionate debate, accountability, all those wonderful things you can put in place. It means that you then also have to adapt to a situation where you can have great discussions, you know, lots of debate, or actually, I can't debate this anymore. I need you to do this stuff now. And you need to stay focused. So there's the best leadership style is somebody when they realize they need to be adaptive, dependent on the circumstances, the people that you've got, and the skill level that you then have as a leader. Because it's, I think it's there's different situations where you require different elements of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Can you train that? Can you make people into more adaptive leaders? Or do you think it's instinctive?
No, it's the ability to be trained. I've never come across a perfect leader. They don't exist. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's rooms for everybody to grow. And I really do mean that. It's not a tweak thing to say at all. But you've got to understand yourself, first of all. But in order to do that, you actually just need to understand, why do I do certain things in certain ways? Mm. And so for me, understanding yourself, where this really came, when I started to study psychology and I started to do psychometrics and I started to look at negotiation and influence and communication styles, all of a sudden I kind of understood me. I thought, I tend to do that. Oh, that's how I would think about a certain topic, and that's where my start point is, without a doubt. And then I realized, and these people are different. We can look at the same situation and we're going to discuss it in a completely different way. But if I understand that, instead of me just thinking they don't get it or what on earth are they talking about, I can now literally listen to a group of people and go, oh, right, they're seeing this from a different situation to me, or my natural style. I can adjust to it now to understand where they are. And then it means that I'll probably communicate better.
Yeah.
And I'll be able to influence them. We can persuade, problem solve, all those wonderful things together, because I understand me first of all, but then I understand where they're coming from and I can listen to them. And as I said, adjust to make sure that I can take them with me, because the best form of leadership is to lead without authority. And that's what he's trying to do, is to connect to them emotionally, to get rapport, and then to influence them to do something that he wants. And that's not from a manipulation perspective.
Right.
That's been genuine. How do I get the best out of this individual?
Mm.
And the very best leaders do that well.
So when you say authority, do you mean authority as given by a job title, for example? Or do you mean doing it through kind of control rather than influence, like
you
say?
No, I mean, what I mean is the best leaders do it through influence. But of course, I've got authority. Ultimately, I can tell you to do it. He's
manager
of Man City.
Yeah.
So he can come in and go, actually, don't do that. Do this.
Yeah.
And that will have an effect with some individuals, and you might go, that's okay. But for a lot of people, it won't. So there's, again, an adjustment. But there are some people, you do need to say that. You do need to come in and be quite clear. That is not acceptable. I want you to behave in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that's where the adaptive style comes in.
I've sat and listened to one of your talks before, and one of the most interesting things is that you talk about how you can be the most productive or highest performing version of yourself, and then how that kind of filters down into creating good team dynamics and productive teams. Just tell us a little bit about that.
The most important thing is you'll never get anywhere without a team around you. I think it's really, really clear. Anything I've ever achieved personally, it's as a result of a team. Now, of course, I want to do well for myself, because you know I think it's important that you're pushing the bounds of your own potential. But bringing a team with you just means you've got to have the right people. You've got to have individuals that I think sometimes support you, but are also challenging to the way that you think. I currently run a group of companies at the moment, and I had them all together the other day doing a workshop, doing exactly the same things that I took all of you through. And that was, again, to get us to understand where we're all going. So we're all pointing in the same direction. We're all clear on the kind of behaviors that we need around us and the values that we want to operate to.
Yeah.
But more importantly, those values are quite clear. We understand that this is what excellence means. It means that we are always trying to improve each other's performance, the team's performance, and we're speaking to customers, that we give them the best relationship we possibly can to get advocacy. So we're quite clear on what those things look like, just so that you have a common baseline to work to. And I think then that through time and relationships and then delivering on what you said you were going to do, so accountability being a real key concept within the team, then you have great team results. So it's building the team together over his time, but trying to also accelerate that process. I think the other key thing for me is I don't want to wait for us to get to know each other.
Yeah.
I think there are some things you can do to accelerate that process and coming together, listening, communicating well, understanding each other's journey. So as you're asking me about my journey, what I definitely do is ask people, tell me how you got here. I want to understand about the things that make you tick. Mm-hmm. So I get an insight into what will help you grow as a person? What do you need from this organisation? And then how we can direct it in the right sort of direction for us as an organisation.
How often do you think you should do that as a leader? How often do you look at your team and you think, actually, stop the clock, I need to pull everybody together, I need to reset, something's going off course here? Like, does that just come about naturally and you'll have those individual conversations? Or do you think, okay, I need to get everybody together and say there's a problem here and explain it to the whole group, or pull the
individuals? A minimum of 3 to 4 months, I would say. Yeah. You need everybody back in to realign, this is what we're doing, remember why we're doing this.
Yeah.
And again, I always talk about having a super North Star. So for me, we need to know where we're going. What does it look like? So you can visualize it, we can articulate it, you can see exactly what I see in 3 to 5 years. So I'm looking that far ahead. But in the meantime, we've got lots of stepping stones. We've got loads of milestones we need to hit. And so I set them at every 3 to 4 months. I'm really clear on what we all need to do. So we can look at that from a culture perspective, from a target perspective. And then everybody's clear what their part to play is in getting there. We get there. We celebrate success. So we come back and go, this is what we've done. Let's remember, we are really good at what we do. These are all our super strengths. This is what went well. That's the direction we're going. What have we learned? What do we need to do slightly better? And we might just need to adjust slightly.
That kind of thing takes a huge amount of self-awareness, doesn't it? I mean, to recognise when you're going off course is one thing. And one of the things that I spend a lot of time talking about and thinking about is self-leadership and how you need to hold yourself accountable before you can hold other people accountable. How do you... I don't know what it is. I mean, is it just experience? How can you train somebody to be more self-aware and therefore able to kind of catch the team and the wider organisation when it might be going off on a bit of a tangent?
So I talk about having a map. Mm-hmm. So the key thing is, and we did it the other day, so I got all of my teams together. I got A1 sheets of paper, A3 for them as individuals, A1 for the organisation. And I said, right, let's draw it down. So let's be really good. Draw what it looks like. Mm. So when you think about yourself, so I would just say to you two, 3 to 5 years, where do you want to be personally and professionally? That's really important. So the hobbies you're doing, the things you want to do to grow as in your business, for you as a group, what do you want to do from a journalist perspective? How do you want to do better at PR? How are you connecting? Things we're doing like the podcast, all of those things will be written down. So you can see if you do this really well, that's what you've done. You've changed the world. You've connected to all these other organisations and you've helped to influence and become better. That's probably where you are looking to go. And then we just do the roadmap. What do we need to do in the next 3 to 4 months? 8, 12, right the way through. So you've got some clear milestones, then what behaviours you need. And all of a sudden, on a single sheet of paper, I've got the heart of me, almost my soul, because they'll be your words. It won't be anything else. It'll be your words, your phrases. You've got everything down there about you in total. And then you just apply the same to a business. As a business, what does that look like? And of course, all of a sudden, you can see where it all overlays. And it just helps focus your mind because it allows you to step back. The key thing on this is we tend to get caught up in everyday stuff, every week stuff, every month, and all of a sudden 10 years have gone by because you've not taken a step back. You've just been too busy doing, and time's so precious that by doing this, all of a sudden you can just get a view of, oh, that's what I need to do.
Could you explain a little bit about having your own compass and just for anybody that hasn't heard before?
So for me, I always talk about having a compass for life. So the north point on a compass, it always points north. That's the super North Star. That's where, again, you want to be in the next 3 to 5 years. Now, it could be something as big from a child's perspective as I want to be an astronaut, to I want to play the piano, or I just want to get a set of skill sets that are going to help me grow. But it takes you forward. So it gives you experiences, you meet people, it enables you to have characteristics and behaviours because of what you've got to do and skills that you learn to just make you a better version. Because I look at life as just being, it's a journey. I've done, I think, 7 different jobs already. All I've done on those elements is just learn about me. And for whatever I want to do in the future. So it's a, for a moment in time, that's where I'm going. The South Cardinal is your ability to be a strategist. And that's when you look at this problem, that's where I want to be. How far away is that? I need to look at this from a factual perspective, just logical analysis. What contingents do I need in place? What team do I need to help me get there? What are the stepping stones, the milestones in order to be successful? The East Cardinal is your values, the characteristics you need, and where you are on the character scale will always be really important. That probably defines most people's journey, and that's just about what behaviours do I need? Do I need courage, integrity? Do I need fairness, justice? What are the things that I need to take with me on this journey? And I need a team code of conduct. So how is a team going to behave? How do I connect and communicate so that it's a challenging environment but supportive? And the West Cardinals being a warrior. And a warrior is not about you're big and tough. It's just the strength of character that you have to get to each of the milestones that you set yourself. So that is about physical resilience. So am I making sure right breakfast in the morning, as we were talking about earlier, to hydration, to sleep, to nutrition, to exercise, just to make sure, again, I'm in a great place. I've got the energy I require on this journey. And then I need mental resilience. Mind and body are connected. Therefore, I need to make sure I've got the right strategies. When I face fears, or the fear of failure being probably the biggest fear that most people have, to any obstacle, I can just adjust. And I've got the right strategies mentally to deal with it, overcome them, and move forward. I always talk, if you can articulate the four cardinals and your compass is in equilibrium, then you'll be difficult to beat. That aligned with a map just means you're on the right journey.
What advice would you give to somebody thinking about their you know, their super North Star? Because actually it's quite overwhelming. Like, I think, where should I be, or where do I want to be, or what, you know, how do you kind of balance the professional and personal, you know? I think because I'm right at the beginning of that journey, that I'm looking at it as like, wow, this is a really big question to step back and ask myself.
So I would just go for passions, what motivates you, the things that you'd like to do for yourself. Remember, life's an adventure. Just really take it. This is an adventure to go on and get experiences. I personally don't care about your title or how much money. It's not about that. It's about the person that you are. If I'm going to describe you, it'll be on the things that I see as a person. The only way you can develop is to actually experience life in a multitude of different ways. So all I would say is just take it that that's what it is. You know, you're in this job at the moment. You're going to meet some great people. You'll meet some great people. What I love about Don't Cry Wolf is its philosophy. So you've got loads of great. That's a great start point, isn't it? So even if you stuck with that for 3 years and you saw where that went from a professional perspective,
thanks, Lloyd.
I would say you're in a great place, aren't you? And then, but I've always come, you've got to grow as a person. So what are you just doing to make sure you're not missing out on whether you want to play the piano, whether you want to fly a plane? And we can get hung up, especially as a mum, or it's for my child. And I've got, I've got all of that. That's great. But to get your energy, surely you want to do something for you. But the Dalai Lama calls it wise selfishness. And all he's saying is,
I love that quote.
It's just saying, just look after yourself first and foremost, because then you'll have energy. And of course, that doesn't mean to say you're not humble, or there are other people that are more important, because there won't be. There'll be loads of other individuals that you will definitely have as being important, but to give them the love and time that they require, you've got to be in a good place. So that is about taking just time out so that you're growing, you're developing. Otherwise, lots of things will pass you by and then you might regret something.
So there's lots of people, I suppose, leadership coaches, people who do various TED Talks, which I consume all the time, they talk about love and how there's not enough love in the workplace, basically, compassion of any kind. And I think it's just, it's not popular to show vulnerability. Can you sort of tell us about a time when perhaps you've had to do that, where you've had to take a step back and say, actually, this isn't working, whether that be your own personal difficulties or whether it be the team not heading in the right direction, and how you've sort of brought yourself back from that cliff edge?
I think where it comes back to is sometimes you are driven to try and push things forward and you want to be successful. And sometimes it can be really clear. You can look at a situation, and I can go back to being in the military with a group of soldiers, where it's really clear what we need to do and where we need to go. But what you've got to do is you've actually got to take a step back and go, I actually need to to get where they are. And even when things, even when I look at things and think we are going off track here, we need to do that. We need to behave in a certain way. But what you've then got to do is come back and connect to them and just find out why are they feeling vulnerable and scared and frightened about what potentially they're going into, in order to, again, I think basically connect and also show that you do care. I remember doing working with a particular group, and they were about to deploy overseas to a very, very tough area. And they'd been given a task to do, and it went horribly wrong. I mean, horribly wrong. And I had a group of people around me that were outraged that this had happened and wanted to remove some individuals, wanted to say that this was unacceptable, and which it was. So ultimately, they were correct. But what they wanted to do was just so extreme that it would not have worked. And luckily, by that stage, I kind of had learnt that you've got to connect with these people. So it's a matter of sitting down and not getting away. And this is the key thing: is just because you're vulnerable, you want to show some vulnerability and some love, that does not mean there's not high challenge. This is really important going, because it's strange. When they've done research, they've looked at environments that are just high challenge, and that doesn't work. Just high challenge with no love doesn't work. Total love and no challenge does not work. And actually, that's the worst environment to be in. Because you're not going anywhere with this. Just, we just get on really well. It's just a really lovely place, but there's no...
just having a great time.
Just having, you know, it's like a kingdom of love, which is all good. But nobody's doing anything. We don't say anything.
We're
going to
run out of money in a minute.
Exactly. And again, that's exactly what happens. So that strange enough, is the worst type of environment. So you've got to come back to where we do both. So for me, it was a matter of coming back and thinking, right, I can't do it that way. What I've got to do is just go, right, let's just be honest about where we are. Let's come back to it. And actually, I could say, I've been here. I've seen these mistakes before. Don't think I've seen quite as much as I've just seen over the last couple of days. However, it's about then realising, but if we're going to work and do well, then we need to step up this performance. But you have to connect emotionally.
Yeah.
You have to. And there's nothing wrong with saying, and I've made these mistakes before. And sometimes we get scared. I think the best thing for me is when you do have the ability to turn around and go, look, yeah, I am scared.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean I'm not going to get in the arena. It's just that I know it is scary. So why would we not say that as human beings? And of course, when you say it, people go, oh, yeah, I'm a bit scared too. Great. So let's just get it all out.
Yeah.
And we're scared because of what reason? So now we've got solutions, haven't we? We're not keeping it internal. And that's the key thing about this, is there are no perfect leaders. And I would always say, as I said to my group the other day, I'm not one. I make tons of mistakes. Actually, I've got no hang-ups in making mistakes.
Yeah.
I also don't know everything. Why would I? There's people in this room that are far more, that are experts in this particular field, and I'm not. I'm a novice in this field. So I will be listening to you. It doesn't mean to say I'm not going to make the decision, but why would I not get that out straight away? Then I'm not hung up over it. And I think that's the other key thing, is we tend to have chips by trying to be perfect, not wanting to ask for help, not show weakness. If you get rid of them all, I just think it puts you in a much better place then to think, I'm still going to make a decision at some stage, but I'm not hung up by it. And these people can give you the right advice. That's probably where I think it's important, is you're getting the right advice so you can make the right decisions.
So you talk about how your dreams should scare you, and you just talked about it again there. I can't imagine anything scares you, honestly. Can you tell us? Because I think it will make everyone feel a lot better about themselves. Mainly me.
That's why I'm asking this question.
I think it's one of those wonderful things, is what I love is it's just that challenge of thinking, I'm actually pushing the bounds of my performance here. This could go one or two ways. So I run a number of businesses at the moment, which are in, one's in the fintech space. So I have a prepaid foreign exchange multi-currency card. I'm not selling it, but I do have it. And it is scary because we're pushing the bounds of lots of development phases. We've got some brilliant teams working. We've got some contracts that are running through. So all of that's scary because actually we could go vertical in a very short space of time, or it could be a five-year project where we're all connected, or you know, all of our livelihoods are all connected to this, and you've also got other people's livelihoods. So I look at this and think, actually, what is scary, there are 40-45 people that are beholden to the decisions that you make. So those things, you know, those things should frighten you. I think those should be always moments where you're thinking, it's okay, but it's just me. I mean, if it's just going to affect me, then that's one thing. But when you're making decisions that can affect 45 people's livelihoods, those are pretty big decisions to make.
So are you saying that you're also scared of failure, just to be clear? Because I'm scared of
failure. Oh, it's an interesting one. So
now
I'm saying no. So what I'm saying is, I'm going to have to be honest, no, because I would always take it still that was a learning curve. And I mean that in this sense. I don't see failure in that way. It doesn't mean to say that it doesn't occur. So let's just say one of the businesses doesn't work and it implodes. I would be mortified that happened.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't turn around and then stop. It would not stop me from doing another business. It would not stop me from doing something else.
Yeah.
I'd just be gutted that it happened. Mm-hmm. And I would be cross and all the other things that would go with it, but it would be very short-lived.
Yeah.
I would literally dismiss it within a very short space of time, and I would be going back onto what did I learn from it? Where did I go from? So I don't see that word. I don't see it in the same way. Mm-hmm. So it happens.
Yep.
So failure does happen. You don't succeed at something. But I don't see it as an inhibitor. I just say, well, that's just another learning curve.
Yeah. And I guess it's also, you can't control that, right? So, you should focus on the things that you can control, things that are within, I suppose, the scope of what you can do to make things better. But ultimately, there are always external factors and influences.
No, there is. I mean, I would still say that I would still want to look, analyze. So what, if I had to make that decision again, would it be better? Would I do something different? So I think you've got to analyse it from there. So lots of things are in control. So I think failure is not an accident. So I'll be really honest about it. I don't think it would have occurred because I was just unfortunately something complete took me. I think there'll be something there that I would definitely be able to point to and go, I made an error here, or that didn't go well, or we should have made a better call. Mm-hmm. So I honestly believe you can minimise bad luck by being really good.
Yeah.
So I think if you're really, really good, you get luck because you've minimised it. You've got all the things in the place, so you tend to get it. So I would still come back and go, there's a mistake somewhere on this particular line. I think success has a strategy as well. But it wouldn't stop me from doing stuff. I'd still be on to another business further down the line. Mm-hmm. Even if everything imploded tomorrow, I'd still think, okay, that didn't go as well as it could have done. What have I learned from it? Mm. Let's move on. What I like about being scared, and I do get scared, what I like about being scared is it's that adrenaline rush. Because I think, actually, I don't know what to do here, so let's just give it a go. I think that's probably where I've got to now. It's just going, well, I just want to...
Yeah.
Actually, I am scared, and I don't know the answer to this. So therefore, I need to learn quickly. Mm. And just try it as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what has helped me sometimes. Certainly, I've just finished a novel, and it's that classic thing of that's going to have to go out at some stage for people to look at. And I've just got to the point where, go, let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's not wait anymore. I can't do any more on it. So that will be out soon. So those things are I suppose there is that element of what will people think and all, because you'll always have that. But I'm pleased with it. So again, I come back, even if it gets late and it doesn't, it's one of those things. I still enjoyed that. So, and I will have learned something from it. I think it's just being able to flip it sometimes and how
I
you see
things.
I love
that point of being like, because I think sometimes you can keep working, but actually there comes a point where you just have to put yourself out there and go, here it is, whatever it is that you're doing. And actually that adrenaline rush of doing that is so satisfying. And
it's definitely the right thing to do. And it's because we have perfect syndrome sometimes, again, which means it must be perfect before it goes. Mm. I'm quite fortunate as well. When I get to about 80%, I know I can't do any more. And I do not mind people coming in to enhance it. So I've given it over to somebody who I know is brilliant and just said, I can't see anything more in that at all. Tweak it. And I don't mind tweaks or anything at all. If they can enhance it, that'd be great.
Yeah.
As long as not changing anything that's core to it, then that's the most important.
I definitely think that perfect is the enemy of the good. I'm always saying that. And I mean, in some ways, I think it's a bit of a let off for myself to create things that aren't perfect and then to kind of move on to the next thing, because I'm definitely most excited about the latest thing that I'm doing. Definitely that kind of person. But I do think that you can get so bent out of shape sitting and thinking about all of the issues and the problems and kind of tweaking things. And then you just end up in a situation where you're not happy with it anyway. And just then you didn't ought to have done it in the first
place.
I totally
agree. And I probably do have a little bit. I probably do in the same way use it as a bit as an excuse to go, I need something that's more detailed to come in and do the nitty gritty.
Yeah, the bit you don't want to do, basically.
It's that nitty, the real deep stuff and have to go, I think I just want something, you can check all that hard
stuff.
But
that comes back to good leadership, because you know what your skills are, you know what you're good at, and you know when to bring somebody else in your team who is good at that job. So.
Definitely.
So So one of the things that we want to hear about is the foundation, which you'll be launching soon. Just tell us a little bit about where that's come from, where it originated within your brain, and then I guess where you're hoping to take it to as well.
Sure. Obviously, I've done lots of leadership and development, and I was asked to go into a school. Somebody said to me, Floyd, how young can you teach people how to lead? And I was really clear, at any age, I didn't ever think there was a limit to it. So I was very fortunate to go into a primary school, and I worked with the children in that primary school for about 6 months, and it was just transformational. One is how bright they were. An innate intelligence in children that I don't think even I'd fully grasped. And for the teachers that I worked alongside, it really, really brought them alive. They just went, we never realised children could think or see things in this way, articulate things, draw. And then we started to take it to different schools. So I've now worked in, I've worked with tens of thousands of children, I think, now. We've taken the Compass work into over 200 schools that actually run Compass projects. I've got schools now that talk about being Compass for Life schools. And so what I also wanted to do was help some of the most disadvantaged children in the country. Again, having travelled around and seen people talk about low aspirational areas or kids that don't have any dreams or aspirations, I just found that it wasn't true. I've never seen that in the schools that I've been in, and I've worked in some pretty tough areas now. I've always seen somebody come away with something that they would like to do to move themselves forward, and then try to see a knock-on effect within the communities that they work within. So we have an ambition to go and transform, again, education to a degree in terms of supporting the curriculum, but doing it from a perspective of giving kids aspiration, hope, that they can go and push the bounds of their performance in whatever they want to do, but also then have that realistic understanding of the things they need to do to get there, values and character traits they'll require, but also the resilience strategy. So again, having their own compass. And we started to do that with quite a few schools already. But my aim is through the foundation is to go and be able to just take it freely into lots of different areas, help teachers understand how to do the Compass work, help the children do it, help the families, the community, and then watch the children give something back to society as they become leaders of the next generation.
So that's it for the show. Thanks to everyone for listening. I hope that it's given you some food for thought. It certainly has us. Floyd's interview was absolutely fascinating. And we will see you next time.